Mr. Adams.
Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Samuel Adams, and with Michael Sutherland, I represent the appellant, Eugene Devbrow. This case comes before the court on appeal from the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the defendants. Mr. Devbrow brought this lawsuit because the defendants refused to order tests to diagnose his prostate cancer before it metastasized and became uncurable. The district court granted the defendants' motion for summary judgment on the grounds that Mr. Devbrow's Eighth Amendment claim was barred by the statute of limitations. The parties agree that a two-year statute of limitations applied in this case. Our disagreement is on the date that Mr. Devbrow's claim accrued. Mr. Devbrow asserts that it was the date that he learned that his cancer had metastasized, while the defendants argue that it was the date that he received the prostate biopsy. The discovery rule, which is a rule of federal common law that applies in Section 1983 cases, holds that a cause of action...
Well, here's your main problem in this case. We've held many times, so have other circuits, that it is possible to sue under the Eighth Amendment as soon as the prison fails to treat. So if there is some, and to take a good example of that, there's Helling against McKinney, which is an objection to secondary cigarette smoke. Now, secondary cigarette smoke might lead ultimately to cancer. And the Supreme Court says you've got a claim as soon as you're exposed, right? Your view that the claim doesn't accrue until the person is harmed would mean in the Helling case, no one could sue until he'd been diagnosed with cancer. Obviously, the Supreme Court says you can sue as soon as there's the exposure to the risk. And then you have the usual problem that, as Wallace says, your claim accrues as soon as you can sue.
Right. The distinction that I would draw here is that the exposure to the cigarette smoke is a harm.
No, it's not a harm. The way it's analyzed in Helling, the way these things are normally analyzed, is that failure to do something about other prisoners smoking creates a risk of a future injury. And that's the nature of the claim here. Your client says, I wanted this biopsy in order to deal with the risk of a future injury.
Right. Well,
there's no doubt whatsoever that as soon as the prison said, you're not getting a biopsy, your client could have filed a lawsuit. No doubt whatsoever. So the question is why that doesn't mean the claim accrued then.
Well, I disagree with that, Your Honor, because...
No, the last thing you want to do on behalf of prisoners is say they can't sue till they're diagnosed with metastatic cancer, right?
Well,
we have held, and we're not going to overrule those cases, your client could have sued as soon as the prison said no biopsy. You're going to have to take that as given.
Okay. Well, this court has distinguished between seeking prospective relief and seeking... retrospective relief. And
all right. And that is then going to be the critical question. Does a different accrual date attach to each set of relief? Prospective relief if the prison refuses a biopsy and damages when cancer is diagnosed. Have we said that there are two different accrual dates? Have other circuits said that?
I'm not aware of any case specifically saying there are two different accrual dates. But if the standard is that the plaintiff would be able to obtain the relief that he is seeking, then the court has held that that there is a difference.
No. There are a lot of cases in medical malpractice that say if you can sue on date X, the fact that there's some future injury doesn't mean you can sue again for the future injury. There's only one claim. Now, maybe there's something different about Eighth Amendment claims. I was wondering whether you had done research, and of course, as you can imagine, my next question is going to be, and did you make such an argument to the district court?
The case in which this court did hold that there is a difference was Babcock versus White, which involved the risk of a failure to protect from an inmate attack. This court said that that because the plaintiff was not actually attacked, his Eighth Amendment claim for damages failed, but had he sued before he was transferred to another prison, while the risk was still present, that that he could have sued for prospective relief. And I think the court may not have specifically referred to it, but in the that would be my response. That is the case where the court distinguished between prospective relief and damages, claims for damages.
The other half of my question was there any request in the district court to adopt a two accrual date approach?
No, there was not, Your Honor. The defendants did not make that argument in their summary judgment brief.
Did you argue that this claim is properly analogized to a claim for medical malpractice damages and that we ought to be using those accrual rules, which would suggest that a claim does not accrue until there's an injury and the plaintiff knows its cause?
We did make that argument, whether we specifically said we did cite a case that the district court said was inapt because it was a medical malpractice case.
Well, this is properly analogized to a claim of medical malpractice, except it's got a heightened state of mind requirement. It's not a negligence standard. It's a deliberate indifference standard. But the nature of the injury is the same.
Correct.
When we're talking about Eighth Amendment claims based on medical errors made by prison doctors.
Yes, and we did cite a case that I believe it was, and my memory may be failing me on this, it may have been the Lavallee case out of the Fifth Circuit. We didn't cite it in our briefs before this court, but we did cite it before the district court. And the district court said that that case was inapt because it was a medical malpractice case, and the district court simply said it's inept because these are different claims.
And you're accepting that or challenging that?
We're challenging that.
Okay. So you want this analogized to medical malpractice, except with a heightened
correct
state of intention.
Correct.
And the general rule on claims accrual in that context is what?
That the claim accrues when the medical malpractice plaintiff learns that he suffered harm caused by the doctor's negligence.
Or in this case, the doctor's deliberate indifference.
Correct.
And that date would be when in this case?
In this case, he learned that his cancer had metastasized in December of 2005. And he filed his lawsuit in October of 2007, so that is within the two-year statute of limitations. And at this time, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Adams.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Carol Dillon, and I represent Dr. Malak Hermina and nurse practitioner Kelly Carroll. And I want to jump right in where we just left off with the plaintiff, and I don't think it's proper to analogize the accrual for a federal claim to an Indiana medical malpractice claim. And the difference is, when you have a medical malpractice claim in Indiana, you have to have causation and you have to have damages to have a claim. And that's, we're not appreciating the difference between that and a deliberate indifference claim. And a deliberate indifference claim is, just as Your Honor said, as soon as your constitutional rights are violated, that's your injury. Your actual physical harm later tells you what the case is worth.
It's your first injury. There may be more. That's what leads to my question about the possibility of multiple accrual dates when there are multiple distinct injuries.
The claim is complete, though, when you have that first injury because you know your rights have been violated.
I'm well aware of that, having been through this with Mr. Adams, but I wish you'd address my question. Can there be multiple accrual dates? Forget about state law. Suppose this is just a Federal Tort Claims Act suit for medical malpractice, right? And the claim consists in two things. First, failing to have a biopsy, and then second, potentially years later, metastatic cancer is discovered when there is a biopsy. Is there one accrual date or two under the Federal Tort Claims Act?
There's one.
And you base that on what statute or decisions?
I'm basing it on the fact that that's the only reasonable interpretation.
Look, federal courts have been at this job now for 220, 30 some odd years. You would expect there would be some law about this. I'm not asking counsel to make things up on the spot. When I ask questions about law, I'm really interested in law. Has anybody looked? Mr. Adams apparently has not. Have you?
I am not aware of any federal statutes or case law that says there are multiple accrual dates. Theoretically, Mr. Devereaux could get out of prison and decide he has a loss of wage loss capacity claim. That then doesn't create another accrual date. There's the Constitution.
Well, maybe it does and maybe it doesn't. I would really like to know law. Medical cases often have very long deferred harms. The failure to take a precaution in year one might be actionable, and the consequences of that lack of precaution might be evident not until year 10. Now, the argument you're making means the failure to take a precaution in year one has to be sued on before 2 years have passed, and it just doesn't make any difference what happens in year 10. It's conceivable that that's the law, but it's also conceivable that there are two different accrual dates, one in year one and one in year 10. And I would just really like to know what federal courts have said about this in the last 230-some-odd years.
I think what federal courts have said is there's value to there's a constitutional violation in and of itself has value, and that's your claim. Now,
it's a claim.
And it entitles you to nominal damages at least. If you have harm later, in this case, he can't have a radical prostatectomy. Now, that gives the case more value in terms of whether there's punitive damages or compensatory damages. But that doesn't create the claim. That just gives value to the claim. And that's the difference between a medical malpractice case and a deliberate indifference case, which is why the burden is much higher for a deliberate indifference case, because you know as soon as your rights have been violated whether you have a claim. If his first prostate biopsy did come back negative, if the second had come back negative, he still would have had a claim. Now, presumably the district court would have limited him to nominal damages, but he knew he had a claim.
In what sense did he know he had a claim at the time of the first biopsy?
Because Mr. Devereaux asked, beginning in February of 2004, I think I have prostate cancer, my PSAs are high, I have a family history, I'm worried, I'd like to know one way or the other. His complaint states his claim is for the failure to approve diagnostic tests that would have told him one way or the other. He knew he had a claim because his real injury is the lack of peace of mind for approximately a year and a half. He thought he had cancer. He wanted to know one way or the other. He said in his deposition, as soon as I got that first biopsy, I was satisfied because I knew I had peace of mind. That's what the actual injury is in this case. It's not that it had metastasized later.
He's not suing for that injury. He's suing for the failure to diagnose the metastatic cancer on time.
He's suing
for a very distinct injury, not the lack of peace of mind for the year and a half in which he was denied a biopsy. The first biopsy was negative, right?
Correct.
So he doesn't have any interest in suing at that point.
Well,
he has no injury to
sue over. He does have an injury. His constitutional rights were violated from his perspective because he didn't get the medical treatment or the diagnostic tests he thought he needed, regardless of the results of those tests.
Right. In what sense does that foreclose a claim for his later injury, which is the one that we're talking about here, the metastatic cancer?
It wouldn't foreclose it if he had filed his complaint on time, which would have been 2 years from the date of the first biopsy.
He didn't know he was injured in that way.
He doesn't have to know that he has a federal claim. The fact that he claims he can no longer have a curative treatment for prostate cancer goes to the value of his claim, not the fact that he has a claim.
You're arguing this as if the statute of limitations inquiry operates as essentially an inquiry into a statute of repose, where knowledge of the injury sued upon is irrelevant. And I think that's not the rule. I think we do use notions of discovery in this context.
I think using the discovery rule, as the plaintiff has asked, Mr. Devereaux's claim would still be on the statute of limitations. The district court was correct when it said he discovered that he had an injury when his constitutional rights were violated. That's the injury. Now, he can develop later, you know, whatever he wants. It's metastasized, it hasn't metastasized, but that's the injury, is the constitutional violation itself.
So then the case could then, under your theory, a case could be pending 4, 5, 6 years to wait to find out whether or not the cancer had metastasized. You know, in terms of the damages, you know, so then in other words, we just hold it in abeyance until we find out if there's a real injury, you know, like what if the cancer happens?
I mean, I don't really think that would be necessary because, again, his claim is for a denial of medical care that occurred over about a year and a half period. And then that itself has value. Now, if he didn't, I mean, that only issue would go to whether he has compensatory damages. So I would argue that you don't need to stay it. You wouldn't need to wait until you had, I mean, if, theoretically, then we could stay it forever to see how his outcome is. And that's simply not reasonable either.
Well, that's why doesn't it make more sense to say he's got a new injury or a different claim once it metastasizes?
If it was a state law claim, perhaps, but not on a constitutional claim.
So this constitutional claim is not cognizable as opposed to time-barred?
I'm sorry?
Your argument is that this constitutional claim is not cognizable as opposed to simply being time-barred?
No, it's just time-barred. He knew he had a claim as of April 27, 2005.
But a claim for loss of peace of mind, not for medical injury.
That would have been part of his claim had he filed on time. The fact that he could no longer have a radical prostatectomy would have been part of his claim. But he didn't need to wait until December 2007 to know that he had a constitutional claim. Thank you. I would just ask that you affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Adams? Oh, sorry. Mr. Weirich.
May it please the court. Andrew Weirich on behalf of defendant Dr. Kalu. Our positions are essentially identical in terms of the factual interplay. One point I'd like to address with regard to the stay. Stays are appropriate where the condition at issue justifies it and routinely happens, for example, in lead paint poison cases where a young child is exposed to lead paint. The nature of the injury isn't known until 5, 10, 15 years later. So it could be in certain kind of situations that such a stay is appropriate. I think the key thing here, in looking at the various ways that statute of limitations can be extended, the discovery rule, he had no reason to realize there was a violation, tolling. For example, in the Richards case where you have someone alleging, I was so physically sick, I couldn't file suit. None of those are at play here. Mr. Devereaux was in treatment before he went into the prison, was well aware of the risks, and was very concerned about his situation, made multiple complaints. So we have a deprivation of a constitutional right occurring, which is actionable, recoverable for a minimum of nominal damages, which could have been pursued. The last date being when the first biopsy was performed. Plaintiff argues, well, that was inconclusive, so you should look at the second biopsy. Even if we look at that, suit wasn't still filed till more than 2 years afterwards. So we believe if you look at Wilson v. Garcia and apply the general 2-year statute of limitation, the cause of action accrues once a constitutional violation occurs. We believe the suit was untimely and the decision should be of the district court should be affirmed.
I certainly hope your position is the claim accrues when the defendant believes he has been injured. Because your most recent formulation, the claim accrues when the constitutional violation occurs, implies that if the defense contends that there has been no constitutional violation, then the statute of limitations would never begin to run. Never, ever.
Well, obviously, if there wasn't a violation, then there would be a claim to prosecute. But assuming there was a violation, it accrues once that factual basis to believe that violation occurred.
Thank you, Mr. Weirich. Anything further, Mr. Adams? Now it's your turn.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address Ms. Dillon's point that Mr. Devereaux could have filed his suit when the defendants the defendants refused the treatment, or rather that Mr. Devbrow could have, yes, that Mr. Devbrow could have had a constitutional violation at that time. Again, I would ask the court to look to Babcock versus White, where the court held that the inmate who was not actually attacked by his fellow inmates did not suffer a constitutional violation. This court affirmed the judgment in favor of the defendants in that case. It did not reverse and hold that the plaintiff could establish a constitutional violation, but only receive nominal damages. And as to Mr. Weirich's point about the potential of a stay, that was Mr. Weirich's argument was the first time that the defendants had mentioned the possibility that that a stay would be the appropriate way to handle the case where the plaintiff doesn't know that he's been injured. And it is our belief that the injury, not damages, but the injury, is an element that the plaintiff is required to prove to establish an Eighth Amendment violation.
Your problem is that, as I said when we talked earlier, that a prison's failure to take precautions against future harm is itself an injury. That's the basis of Helling. And the standard federal rule is that your claim accrues when you know your injury and its cause. And your client knew that there was no biopsy being ordered, and he knew who it was who did it. Under Kubrick, the claim accrued.
I see that my time is up, but I would just
respond. Always deal with questions and observations from the bench.
Right. I would just say that I think that Babcock forecloses the possibility that he had an injury, because the court held that deliberate indifference without the actual attack did not satisfy the injury requirement of the Eighth Amendment.
The Supreme Court's decision in Helling is wrong, and we should not follow it.
I think that the injury was different in Helling than the alleged injury in Babcock.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case will be taken under advisement.